lost our jobs. We demand neighboring countries to provide us with humanitarian aid.
Afghanistan's economy, which depends on foreign aid, suffered a big loss in the recent change of government. The people of Afghanistan look forward to receiving international aid, calling for an end to sanctions on Afghanistan as soon as possible. They believe that blocking the assets of Afghans by U.S. government puts the people under pressure rather than the Taliban.
The United Nations has warned of a looming food crisis in Afghanistan. The UN has also said that its food stocks in the country could run out by the end of September, further pushing millions of Afghans to the brink of starvation. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
A number of Palestinians have been killed by Israeli soldiers during military raids into different areas in Jenin and northwest of Al-Quds. Three Palestinians were killed near the towns of Beit Anan and Biddu, northwest of Al-Quds. The Israeli military said its forces had been tracking a Hamas movement cell for several days and had conducted a wave of operations against the movement across the West Bank and killed Ahmed Zahran, Mahmoud Ahmedan, and Zakaria Badwan, all from Biddu town.
We were shocked by the martyrdom of a number of our sons. We say their blood will pave the way for the Palestinians to go ahead with their fight against the occupation. This is only one part of the Zionist violation against our people.
In the village of Burqin, southwest of Jenin, 16-year-old Yusuf Sabah was killed during the clashes and his body was confiscated by the Israeli forces. 22-year-old Osama Subah was another Palestinian from Burqin killed by Israeli forces. He succumbed to his injuries in a hospital in the city. Palestinian Islamic Jihad later endorsed him as a group member and threatened that black days await Israel in the West Bank and its crimes will only intensify the movement's resistance and unity. Thousands took part in his funeral procession. His wedding was planned for next month, his father told us.
We received the news with utter shock and immense sadness, but no objection. It's Allah's will. Osama's wedding was supposed to be next month, but he was chosen to be martyred.
Two Israeli soldiers were seriously injured during the clashes that broke out between Palestinians and Israeli forces. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett issued a statement backing the military's operation.
Palestinians say Israel uses lethal force to stem anti-regime resistance in the occupied territories. But they say Tel Aviv will fail to intimidate them into giving up their struggle. Muna Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
September 26 marks the International Day of Solidarity with Palestinian Journalists, initially declared by the International Federation of Journalists in 1996. To this end, Palestinians held a sit-in rally in front of the house of the journalist Yusuf Abu Hussein, who was killed by Israeli airstrikes during the last escalation in the Gaza Strip.
Yusuf has been targeted inside his home. Israeli regime intends to target journalists in an attempt to hide the truth of this inhuman regime from being delivered to the world. This is totally against international law to target civilians.
There are 24 Palestinian journalists inside Israeli jails, including a female journalist. There are also a huge number of journalists that were injured and others killed while doing their work.
Palestinian journalists and media outlets have always been a direct target of the Israeli regime. Hundreds of journalists have been killed or injured while covering the Israeli crimes in Gaza.
This is a stand to express our support and loyalty to our colleagues who have been killed or arrested by the Israeli regime for only covering the truth. This event is held to highlight that we won't allow the international community to ignore the Israeli crimes committed against journalists. During the last escalation, we lost Yusuf. 35 media institutions were bombed and more than 12 journalists were injured.
Palestinians called on the international media organizations to show solidarity with Palestinian journalists and take steps to provide them with security. During the recent escalation of unrest in Gaza, the Israeli regime has intentionally targeted Palestinian journalists and destroyed several media offices in a bid to block the truth. Palestinians here call on the international community to provide protection and security for journalists and hold Israel accountable for committing atrocities against them. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
This is the second time that the aircraft that belongs to Iran's Mahan Airlines lands here in Kabul International Airport since the beginning of September to deliver tons of humanitarian aids to war-weary Afghans who are experiencing difficult days due to poverty and joblessness.
This is the second time that we have brought some food for the Afghani people. Before the previous time, it was about 25 pounds. 20 tons of food and 5 tons of medicine. This time it is all food.
The flow of humanitarian aid by Iran to Afghanistan is welcomed by all in Afghanistan, saying their country needs more assistance to save the lives of millions of ordinary people who are at risk of hunger and malnutrition. They also believe there must be a transparent process to distribute the aids to most needy ones.
Given that poverty and joblessness are on the rise in Afghanistan, I think it would be better for donors to first provide food and then pay serious attention to the healthcare sector.
We have been receiving international aid since 2001 during the rule of Karzai and Ghani over Afghanistan, but all to no avail, because poverty is still bothering our people. So my suggestion is that these aids must be distributed first among the most vulnerable, poor and jobless people.
Iran has pledged to continue its support to Afghanistan and its people in different economic, humanitarian, political and security fields. This comes as Taliban takeover in mid-August suddenly changed the situation in Afghanistan, and of course, it also brought some major changes in the policies of some Western states, mainly the U.S. toward Afghanistan, such as freezing Afghanistan's assets. The freeze of Afghanistan's reserves by the U.S. is labeled as an illegal move by Washington against ordinary people. That is why Afghans widely condemn the move and ask why ordinary Afghans should pay the price of Washington's defeat in Afghanistan. However, Afghans look to supportive stances and moves of some neighboring countries like Iran as an example of honesty and true cooperation with Afghans. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Thousands of people took to the streets in Damascus to mark Arba'in, the 40th day after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. Mourners from Syria, Iran, Iraq, and Bahrain walked their way from different parts of Damascus to Sayyida Zainab Shrine, the sister of Imam Hussein, to mark the occasion.
We came walking from Sayyida Ruqayya Shrine to Sayyida Zainab. We don't care about terrorism or takfirism. We will every year mark this day and renew devotion to Imam Hussein and Sayyida Zainab. We learn patience and faith, courage and sacrifice from them.
Whatever we do, it's nothing compared to the sacrifices of Imam Hussein. We came on foot from our homes to express condolences to Sayyida Zainab on her brother's martyrdom.
Wearing black clothes, visitors flocked demonstrating the events that took place on the day Imam Hussein was killed by the tyrant of his time, Yazid. They chanted slogans expressing condolences and love to the Imam, as well as devotion to remain adherent to the principles of Imam Hussein, who sacrificed his life to confront injustice, tyranny, and oppression.
Our message to all those who love Imam Hussein is that the Waqf of the captives will remain alive in our memory. We are representing today what happened on Ashura to revive the events that happened that day.
The significance of commemorating Arba'in at Sayyida Zainab Shrine is the fact that she was a symbol of resistance after her brother's martyrdom in the face of enemies. The shrine was also a target of the oppressors of our time, the U.S.-backed terrorists. The sacrifices of resistance fighters, however, kept it secured.
Syrian Muslims have never failed to mark Arba'in in holy shrines, even at such critical times as the coronavirus pandemic. Their attendance here is a message of adherence to resistance against injustice at all times and a reiteration of their commitment to the path of Imam Hussein. Muhammad Ali from Sayyida Zainab, Damascus countryside.
In the limelight.
Anxiety or depression was the most common of 9 core long COVID symptoms reported among 270,000 people recovering from coronavirus in the United States. We have prepared for you an article written jointly by Andrew Gregory and Sally Wheel. The piece is titled COVID, 37% of people have symptoms 6 months after infection. A new study suggests 1 in 3 people infected with coronavirus would experience at least one symptom of long COVID. Much of the existing research into the condition, a mixture of symptoms reported by people often months after they were originally ill with COVID-19, has been based either on self-reported symptoms or small studies. Now, researchers at the University of Oxford, the National Institute for Health Research, and the Oxford Health Biomedical Research Centre have shed fresh light on the scale of the problem after studying more than 270,000 people recovering from coronavirus in the United States. They found 37% of patients had at least one long COVID symptom diagnosed 3 to 6 months after infection. The most common symptoms were breathing problems, abdominal symptoms, fatigue, pain, and anxiety or depression. The National Institute for Health Research NIHR academic clinical fellow Dr. Max Tackett said the results confirm that a significant proportion of people of all ages can be affected by a range of symptoms and difficulties in the 6 months after COVID-19 infection. Dr. Tackett added, over 1/3 of patients were diagnosed with at least one of the long COVID symptoms between 3 and 6 months after their COVID-19 illness. According to the data from the U.S.-based TriNetX Electronic Health Record Network, severity of infection, age, and sex affected the likelihood of long COVID symptoms. Study published in the journal PLOS Medicine showed long COVID symptoms were more frequent in those who had been hospitalized, and they were slightly more common in women. Different factors also influenced which of the symptoms people were most likely to experience. For example, older people and men had more breathing difficulties and cognitive problems, whereas young people and women had more headaches, abdominal symptoms, and anxiety or depression. The research found COVID patients admitted to hospital were more likely to suffer cognitive problems like brain fog and fatigue compared with people who did not need to be admitted. People who did not need hospital care were more likely to have headaches than those who needed to be admitted to hospital. The researchers said many patients had more than one long COVID symptom. Dr. Tackett said, these data complement findings from self-report surveys and show that clinicians are diagnosing patients with these symptoms. We need appropriately configured services to deal with the current and future clinical needs. The study also looked at the same symptoms in people recovering from flu. The study suggests people who get flu can have prolonged symptoms similar to those seen in some patients with long COVID. But lasting symptoms occur to a far lesser extent in those who had influenza. The researchers estimated symptoms linked to long COVID were 50% more common among those who had COVID compared with those who had flu. Professor Amitabha Banerjee, Professor of Clinical Data Science and Honorary Consultant Cardiologist at University College London, who was not involved in the research, said it was a large, well-conducted and thorough study. He said the findings supported the calls that have been made for large-scale rollout of health services for those with long COVID, including those not hospitalized with COVID-19. Professor Banerjee said over half of patients, or 57% of them, had at least one long COVID feature recorded in the 6 months after infection, and one-third, or 37%, in the 90 to 180 days after diagnosis. Professor Amitabha Banerjee stressed the study had limitations, such as the fact it had focused on the 9 symptoms probably most common among those with long COVID. However, because as many as 200 signs of long COVID have previously been suggested, the reported incidence of long COVID was actually likely to be an underestimate. He added that the fact the 9 symptoms were all more common after COVID-19 than for flu was yet another arrow in the quiver against bogus "this is just like flu" claims. Separate research published on Tuesday, 28th of September, found more than 1 in 10 secondary school pupils and over a third of school staff who had COVID-19 in England have suffered ongoing symptoms. According to the study from the Office of National Statistics, the most common symptom reported by staff and school pupils was weakness or tiredness, while staff were more likely to experience shortness of breath than pupils. Overall, the Office for National Statistics estimates that 970,000 people in the United Kingdom are suffering continuing symptoms after a COVID-19 infection. The figures, based on self-reported symptoms, also suggest 384,000 people are still living with symptoms a year after infection. Moreover, in recent months, long COVID has received a great deal of media and public attention. Research has found that as many as 1 in 4 of those infected with COVID, perhaps millions of people in the United States alone, suffer from chronic long-term symptoms, including headaches, dizziness, abdominal pain, heart problems, fatigue, anxiety, depression, cognitive impairment, and other conditions. It is a difficult and complex illness, and we must do much more to help those who are struggling with it. At the same time, it is important to realize that rather than being a strange special case, long COVID is probably part of a broader phenomena that affects many more people. In recent years, doctors and researchers have increasingly realized that many of those who survive an illness of any kind or who go through serious physical trauma are at high risk for a range of debilitating and chronic physical, cognitive and mental health symptoms, problems that closely resemble long COVID. Seen in this context, it's not at all surprising that many patients infected with COVID find themselves dealing with an array of persistent health problems. This is not to minimize long COVID in any way, but simply to put it in a broader context. The issue is in part a byproduct of a medical transformation. Over the past half century, as medicine has advanced, clinicians have learned how to save hundreds of thousands of severely ill or injured patients who would have previously died. This is a remarkable accomplishment. But in many cases, survival does not mean complete recovery. Some patients find that their bodies, brains, and psyches continue to bear the scars of what they have gone through. One non-COVID study found that a year after hospitalization, a third of patients with severe respiratory failure or shock had significant cognitive impairment. Another study found that between a quarter and a third of patients who were treated in the intensive care unit had significant and long-lasting symptoms of anxiety, depression, or post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Researchers have found similar results for survivors of other medical conditions, including cancer, multiple sclerosis, and ALS. Unfortunately, people with long COVID as well as other chronic post-illness symptoms often find that the medical establishment doesn't understand their experience and so minimizes or questions it. This is not surprising. Clinicians tend to pay less attention to how patients with severe illness do once they're out of mortal danger or once symptoms extend beyond an arbitrary time frame. Researchers do not yet fully understand the physical causes of these chronic symptoms. It is clear that long COVID and long versions of other illnesses and injuries are not psychosomatic. These conditions have a psychological basis. Among the possible culprits may be persistent dysfunction in inflammatory or immune responses triggered by the initial illness or initial injury. In some cases, the disease or injury may also leave permanent damage, just as someone with a broken leg may end up walking with a limp.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily around the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Germany held a general election on Sunday, a vote that's expected to make history in the European Union's most influential country. The results showed that the ruling Union parties have fallen behind the rival Social Democrats by about 2 percentage points, losing the election after 16 years in power. The Social Democratic Party, however, can't form a government as it hasn't garnered enough seats at the lower house of the federal parliament. That means they have to team up with at least one other party to form a coalition. The conservative Christian Democrats said they still intend to form a coalition government.
The people who voted for CDU or CSU want us to take responsibility and govern, and we are convinced that a government under the leadership of the Union is the best thing for Germany, and we have a responsibility to these voters.
Olaf Scholz, leader of the Social Democratic Party, however, said the voters have made it clear that they don't want German Chancellor Angela Merkel's sister parties in power. His party is looking at a coalition with 2 parties that have also made gains in the elections, the Greens and the Free Democrats.
Well, Germany and its elections are important because Germany, with a population of some 80 million people, has roughly the largest population in Europe, with the exception of Russia. And, of course, it has the strongest economy in the traditional concepts of Europe, you know, excluding Russia. The rest of the European community follows pretty much along behind Germany and German politics and German views on how things should be done on the continent.
In the meantime, talks for forming a government may take weeks. Olaf Scholz, however, has vowed to form the cabinet before Christmas. Angela Merkel steered Germany through multiple crises in the past 16 years, establishing herself as the world's most powerful woman. She was raised in East Germany and pursued her education to receive her doctorate in quantum chemistry, 2 factors in her life that observers believe have had a great impact on her political views.
She grew up in Eastern Germany, the German Democratic Republic, the old communist state, and although born in Hamburg, she went east as an infant and absorbed the viewpoint of the German Democratic Republic and state-controlled situations.
Throughout her political career, she was known for helping women take key positions in male-dominated German politics. As an example, she threw her weight behind Ursula von der Leyen, the first female German defense minister and the European Commission president. Under Merkel, Germany played a crucial role in saving the euro during the 2008 financial crisis. She also opened the German borders to refugees during the 2015 migrant crisis, letting in almost 1 million people to the country. The German chancellor had a rocky relationship with former US President Donald Trump. The two clashed over several issues, including the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, funding the NATO, and Trump's so-called Muslim ban on immigrants. Merkel's critics, however, have called her out on her immigration policy, her inaction toward the climate crisis, and her government's COVID-19 restrictions.
And instead of stopping the wars, Merkel simply intensified them by accepting the educated people from those countries, the skilled people from those countries, which deprived the Southwest Asia and North Africa of its most needed middle class. And dumped a load of people into Europe that had no real connection to the continent and had no linguistic or religious or any kind of cultural ties. And the destruction of the European community continues apace as a result of her actions.
Merkel will remain the country's interim chancellor until a new coalition is formed and the parliament votes for a new leader. Her departure marks the end of an era for the European country.
Retired Army Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson is the former Chief of Staff to U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell, who emerged as a leading critic of the neoconservatives. Neoconservatives are characterized by their support of hawkish foreign policies. In remarks to Mass Peace Action last June, he made some brazen assertions about Israel.
I said the other day Israel would not be a state in 20 years. It'd be gone. It certainly will not be a democracy. It'll be an apartheid state, and the world will just reject it, as they did South Africa. But I'm now saying it probably won't be a state. It'll be gone.
He pointed to the 1946 Joint Chiefs of Staff to a State War Navy Coordinating Committee, noting that then U.S. President Harry Truman was trying at the time to decide whether to recognize Israel in 1947-48 and what to do about U.S. policy. Wilkerson said, Israel is a strategic liability of the first order for the United States, and the chances are very high it would drag Washington's feet into a full-fledged face-off.
Israel is the most likely state in the world to take the United States to Armageddon. And I could paint you all sorts of ways we would do that and the ways we would get there.
The retired general also revealed that during 40 years of military service, he had heard constant advice from everyone not to establish an American military base in the Israeli-occupied territories. He stressed that the United States standing with Israel against half of the world is not a good thing. The Israeli regime, he said, needs to be reined, but that would not happen.
Israel, I think, needs to be reined in, and it needs to be told in no uncertain terms, you will change, and you will change swiftly and effectively, or you can count your sugar daddy gone. Yeah, not going to happen. Not going to happen.
In fact, Washington has played a key role in shielding Israel for decades through the supply of arms, financial support, and UN vetoes.
Well, I certainly think that that's a possibility. I do agree that it is delegitimizing itself, even in the eyes of many Jews around the world, especially young Jews, which is going to make it hard, of course, for Israel to reproduce itself. And yes, I think it's being considered more and more a worldwide pariah.
Wilkerson has said that the obsession of U.S. neoconservatives, particularly former Vice President Dick Cheney and former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, is to plunge the entire Middle East region into chaos and to keep Israel's enemies at each other's throats so that they could not unite and give Israel trouble, militarily or otherwise. Wilkerson also pointed out that it does not matter for neoconservatives to target Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, or Iran in their pursuit to set the region on fire, as the important thing for them is to protect Israel. However, the axis of resistance in the region has so far managed to oppose Western, namely United States and Israel, interests in the region and foiled their plots. Members of the axis of resistance include Iran, Syria, and Lebanon's Hezbollah, and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Hamas, to name a few. The latest sign of this assertion is the U.S. House of Representatives' decision to pass a bill to provide $1 billion of additional funding to replenish Israel's so-called Iron Dome anti-missile system, despite the regime's blatant violation of Palestinian human rights.
In recent decades, the United States has increasingly used sanctions as an instrument of foreign policy. There are different types of sanctions, economic or financial restrictions, trade prohibitions, and blocking or seizing assets of individuals, organizations, and countries. Now, a coalition of North American human rights organizations, named the Sanctions Kill Coalition, has released a report on the impacts of the U.S. sanctions on other countries and their people. Whether direct or indirect, most of the U.S. sanctions are not authorized by the United Nations Security Council, and many of them are imposed unilaterally by Washington. In fact, more than two-thirds of the world's countries officially condemn U.S. sanctions as a blatant violation of international law and the U.N. Charter. The report has also revealed a bitter reality that Western media rarely or never talk about. One finding is that U.S. sanctions are hurting the most vulnerable and driving middle-class citizens into poverty. Also, they have resulted in thousands of deaths and humanitarian exemptions. For instance, U.S. sanctions on the Syrian Central Bank have collapsed the country's currency, sending millions of civilians into grinding poverty. Also, waiving sanctions by the U.S. undermined countries' capacity to respond to the coronavirus pandemic, resulting in loss of lives. The inhumane sanctions caused difficulty for countries like Iran,
to obtain medical supplies, sanitation equipment, and other necessary goods to slow the virus spread. Therefore, the U.S. contributed to many unnecessary deaths in Iran.
So we've actually known for 100 years, at least a century, what the impact is. The impact is primarily felt by the civilian population, and it is devastating.
The report also says many U.S. sanctions are based on false claims of an emergency and a threat to national security. The 76th annual session of the United Nations General Assembly kicked off in New York. World leaders discussed a myriad of topics of global concern, including rejecting inhumane sanctions. During his speech at the United Nations General Assembly, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro called for the lifting of sanctions imposed by the United States and the European Union on his country.
We ratify our request. Our demand to the United States and the European Union governments lift all the criminal sanctions against the Venezuelan economy, against the Venezuelan society. We say it with the reason and morality that we have, and we say it on behalf of 30 million Venezuelans.
Maduro denounced what he called permanent systematic aggression waged against Venezuela through these restrictions and called for the establishment of a new world free of colonialism and imperialism. Also, Cuban President Díaz-Canel lashed out at the U.S. administration of Joe Biden for intensifying, quote, the cruelest economic blockade ever imposed against any nation.
The U.S. government has not for 1 minute ceased its attacks on Cuba. But at this crucial and challenging moment for all nations, its aggressiveness exceeds all limits. The cruelest and most prolonged economic, commercial, and financial blockade ever applied against any nation has been opportunistically and criminally intensified in the midst of the pandemic.
Addressing the UN General Assembly, the Cuban president said the U.S. is extorting sovereign states to act against countries it identifies as adversaries. He said the U.S. presses its allies to build coalitions to overthrow legitimate governments. Western media has failed or maybe wanted to fail to inform the public about the consequences and global condemnation of U.S. sanctions. Most U.S. citizens are unaware of the severe harm being done to millions of residents of countries such as Venezuela, Cuba, Syria, and Iran.
It's a primary foreign policy tool that the U.S. government uses in order to weaken and decimate countries that it has disputes with. It should be considered a crime against humanity. The kind of sanctions against a country, against a whole people or a whole nation should be considered a crime against humanity because the effects are horrible.
Exacerbating the suffering of civilians in different countries during a severe health crisis such as the coronavirus pandemic is morally corrupt and a clear disregard for basic human rights. This is what U.S. sanctions have done. The U.S. may be quick to deny this, but deep down it wants sanctions to provoke the populations to rise against the government in the hopes of regime change in the respective countries, something it has for the most part failed to achieve.
After days of controversy, the U.S. House of Representatives has passed a $1 billion bill to fund Israel's so-called Iron Dome missile system. American lawmakers approved the bill in a 420-9 vote on Thursday. The push had appeared in a bill on Tuesday aimed at providing emergency funding to the U.S. government to avoid a shutdown, but was later removed without explanation. The removal was attributed to opposition from a small group of Democrats who demand the U.S. support for Israel be based on the regime's human rights record. The exclusion of the provision, however, drew strong reactions from Republicans and pro-Israeli Democrats, with Republican Senator Lindsey Graham calling the move despicable.
The progressive movement in Congress consists of maybe, less than 10% of the Congress. So they have very little power, and furthermore, the progressives in Congress don't often use their power. They're intimidated a lot of times into going along with the rest of it. So we can't expect very much from the progressives.
Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett thanked both parties in the House for their support, adding that those who tried to challenge the U.S. support for Israel got a resounding response. The bill is now heading to the Senate, where it's highly likely to be approved, as American politicians from both political camps have traditionally backed Israel. It's also expected to be signed into law by President Joe Biden, who has already signaled support for the additional aid. Pro-Israel American lawmakers have been pushing for additional funds to Israel to replenish the regime's missile system since the most recent war on Gaza ended in a ceasefire earlier this year. The truce stopped the 11-day conflict in May, the most intense fighting between Palestinian resistance groups and Israel in years. Palestinians have hailed their victory in the battle, citing the show of force to the Israeli regime by launching over 4,000 rockets and scores of drones to combat the enemy. The sheer scale of the attacks overwhelmed Israel's so-called Iron Dome anti-missile system. The war killed over 250 Palestinians, including 66 children in Gaza and 12 people in Israel. That's a significant number, considering the regime's heavy expenditure on anti-missile systems, while the resistance in the impoverished and besieged Gaza Strip has no means of shooting down Israel's missiles.
From the point of view of justice, there's no reason not for Palestinians not to have an Iron Dome system. But obviously, that's not what Israel wants at all. Israel wants to be able to hit Palestinians, to cause misery and destruction and death to Palestinians whenever they feel like it.
The move by Washington to increase aid to Israel comes despite calls by some U.S. politicians and activists to cut fundings to pressure the regime into respecting Palestinians' rights. With all that said, the reversal of the move to include the additional aid to Israel in the U.S. government's spending budget suggests that Washington's unwavering support for the regime is beginning to falter, as no U.S. lawmaker would hesitate to approve more funding for Israel a few years ago.
The Light.
Most of us know the feeling of being moved by a work of art. A Kosovar artist tries to make us understand a form of political discourse through a mosaic of outgoing German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Alkent Apajogo has made a Merkel mosaic from seeds. The artist says he wished to thank the German leader for having been an example for all the women of the world. He says his work is also a tribute to the towering lady for the support she had given to his country, which declared its independence in 2008. Pajago was doing his work on the same day Germans were voting in the general elections to choose a successor to Merkel. Alkan Pajago holds two Guinness World Records for his giant mosaics made with seeds.
Technology plays an important role in our daily lives. This time, a French company has introduced a device to help the visually impaired to avoid obstacles. The smart electronic device detects obstacles and warns users with a beep. People with vision loss can install it on the top of their canes and receive information through headphones. The gadget helps people to dodge barriers on the ground and above that, for example, the open door of a truck.
If you hear the sound to the right, it means that the obstacle is on the right. If it is straight ahead, the obstacles are in front of you. So you change course according to what you hear. If you hear an obstacle to the left, you go to the right, and this way you can go around the obstacle.
The device costs around $2,300 and is now being used by hundreds of people in Belgium, France, Germany, Italy, and Switzerland.
Thank you.
Wally the Walrus has risen to fame with his extensive travels around Europe. Now the giant mammal has added Iceland to his list of trips. Wally has previously visited France, Spain and the UK. His last known location before Iceland was Ireland. Scientists were not sure at first if they had indeed seen Wally, but Seal Rescue Ireland recognized him from scars on his front flippers. The wandering walrus is 4 years old and weighs about a ton. He has covered a distance of around 5,000 kilometers in his recent trips. Wally is now on his way towards his home in the Arctic. The French zoo has had a very productive year, welcoming multiple new animals into its collection. Two pumas, two jaguars, nine Peruvian squirrel monkeys, and even rarer macaque twins are new additions to the Lemingne Zoo this summer. The animals were bred as part of a program designed to maintain and promote the conservation of endangered species. Once they reach the breeding age, these animals will be transported to other zoos to help boost the population of their species.
Now, a museum in Russia's Kaliningrad has unveiled a special exhibition to the public. It would not be exactly wrong to call the artworks out of trash. All the works exhibited are made of rubbish. The exhibition is showcasing a wide array of objects, including sculptures, musical instruments, robots, and costumes. The project was designed with the aim of raising awareness about recycling. People visiting the exhibition were delighted by the creative use of garbage. Only 7% of waste is recycled in Russia each year, while a vast amount of trash is stored in landfills.
An Egyptian artist is making incredibly tiny statues of famous historical figures and landmarks on pencil tips. 30-year-old Ibrahim Balala is based in the city of Rashid, south of Cairo. He has mastered the art of crafting miniature sculptures. Ibrahim mostly creates statues of Egyptian pharaohs, but Islamic, Greek, and Roman figures also feature in his portfolio. The artist received some criticism when he first ventured on his art, but he persevered and rose to prominence with his minuscule statues. Ibrahim's dream is to open a museum of miniature sculptures someday.
Fourteen lucky penguins have been returned to the seas off the Atlantic coast of Argentina after rehabilitating them from malnutrition and hypothermia. The Magellanic penguins waddled back happily into the chilly waters once they were released. They were distressed, malnourished, and dehydrated when they were found by conservationists in February. There are an estimated 2 to 3 million Magellanic penguins in the world. The cute birds are named after Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan. They are mostly found around Argentina and Chile.
Another groundbreaking archaeological discovery in Peru is now catching attention. 800-year-old human remains south of the capital, Lima, highlight the ancient burial rituals in the South American country. The remains of eight adults and children buried in a common tomb were found by a group of workers laying gas pipes at the site. They were buried with food, dishes, and musical instruments, including flutes. Archaeologists say that the eight people lived in the ancient town of Chilca, some 60 kilometers from Lima. They say some of the bodies were buried with the shells on their heads and had bags with cocoa leaves inside them. They say the discovery will shed more light on the pre-Hispanic history of the region. Another 30 human remains had been discovered in Chilca in 2018.
taxi company in Thailand has turned its vehicles into mini vegetable gardens to help its drivers who are out of work due to the coronavirus pandemic.
The point of this project is so that employees have something to do to reduce stress. To a certain extent, it has helped with reducing our stress, but it isn't really the answer to the situation right now. Even though the drivers and the staff are able to harvest the vegetables for food, it's just part of solving the problem. I think the government should also step in to help us too.
The taxi company is growing vegetables on the roofs and hoods of 300 disused taxis that are parked idly. Prolonged COVID-19 lockdowns have affected the drivers' income negatively so that they are unable to pay the lease of their vehicles. Therefore, working in these gardens has reduced their stress and provided the drivers and their families with food.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Farmers working on the border between Venezuela and Colombia have discovered a tusk that is believed to belong to an American mastodon from 16,000 years ago.
We went to the place and the fossil was there, and then we realized it was something very important. We rescued it because there was a risk of it being lost, and at this moment, it's in the Archaeological and Paleontological Museum of Agualinda.
The experts say the discovery would help them with complementing information about extinct animals and ancient settlements. They say the finding of the tusk in the site would increase its potential contribution to scientific researchers. The discovery of mega faunal fossils in South America has been common over the past decades. In 2019, more than 800 mammoth bones were discovered near Mexico. A group of Cambodian students has designed a manned drone in an attempt to beat traffic. The drone has eight propellers and a school chair for the pilot's seat. It can carry a human weighing up to 60 kilograms. The creative students say the drone is still in its early stages of development and testing. Equipped with four batteries, the human carrier drone can fly up to 4 meters and around 10 minutes above the ground.
Here we have big problems related to traffic jams, so we did some research about this before building the drone. We came up with this drone project as we had the idea that we wanted to solve some problems for our society by making a drone taxi, as well as investing drones for firefighters to help put out fires.
The prototype has cost around $20,000 to build. The designers say they need 2 more years to complete the project. The school has expressed hope that the drone could be used in everyday life.
Iran's capital Tehran has hosted an art show themed with Aspiration for Peace. Organized by the Economic Cooperation Organization, the event seeks to shed light on the beauty of a global peace through the language of art. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Each one of these delicate works of art are created by an artist from a different country, each trying a unique way to highlight the need for lasting peace in the world. Dubbed Aspiration for Peace, the art gallery is organized by Eco Cultural Institute with the aim of promoting global peace through the language of art.
By holding this event, we want to send a message of peace to all countries. We invited diplomats from all embassies here to gather and unite and celebrate a peaceful gathering. Also, the artworks showcased here are created by artists from various countries, and this represents how beautiful it is for nations to live peacefully.
Art helps connect different civilizations and nations. It helps us bridge the cultural gaps and find commonalities. This will establish mutual understanding and harmony among nations, and therefore conflicts can be avoided.
In some of the artworks, images immediately communicate with the audience, even if faces are veiled. These pictures try to narrate the story of Afghan women and an uncertain future that they're facing amid the Taliban's takeover of power in Afghanistan.
The events that are taking place in my country, Afghanistan, are so painful. It might take hours to tell you how hard it is for an Afghan girl to live in insecurity and uncertainty. But through the language of art, you can understand all these words without the need for translation.
The art show was held on the occasion of the International Day of Peace. Observed every year on September 21st, the occasion was introduced by the UN General Assembly as a chance to strengthen the ideals of peace through observing 24 hours of nonviolence and ceasefire.
A picture is worth a thousand words, and indeed, no words can be as strong as the strokes of an artist in speaking the beauty of peace. And this is how the universal language of art transcends the political and cultural boundaries and touches the hearts of viewers, no matter what language they speak. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
French slackliner has wowed watching crowds in Paris by crossing from the Eiffel Tower to the other side of the River Seine. Nathan Poulenc walked across a rope suspended 17 meters above the ground. He finished the 600-meter course in half an hour. On one point, he sat and lay on the rope before arriving at his destination, the Chaliot Theater. The 27-year-old daredevil practiced 4 years to perform this show. Poulenc said that he was staying focused during the walk, and that was very challenging.
When I was young, I had fear of heights, and I learned to contain it. During the performance, I really didn't feel it. I really didn't have that problem. I felt some stress over starting it, but no vertigo, no.
Poulenc said that it was an uneasy experience, but he was happy to share it with the public. The athlete started slacklining 10 years ago. In 2019, he performed a 510-meter-long walk between two skyscrapers in Paris.
Visitors and keepers of a zoo in the Peruvian capital, Lima, are thrilled over the birth of 8 baby penguins from the vulnerable Humboldt species. Zookeepers say the chicks were hatched in July and they're expecting 6 more additions later in October. Currently, the newborns spend their days resting in their nests and being fed by their parents. The Huachipa Zoo currently has 42 Humboldt penguins and is working on recovering the species population.
We have 8 2-month-old chicks and 6 eggs. In 42 days, those eggs will hatch and the chicks will come out. The important thing about Humboldt penguins is that we are recovering their population because they are in a vulnerable state. We are increasing their populations with the breeding we are doing in the zoo.
Researchers say a maximum of less than 10,000 Humboldt penguins are left in the wild, with their population size undergoing extreme fluctuations. The species face emerging threats from agricultural activities to their own vulnerability to predators. The Humboldt penguins are only found along the Pacific coast of Chile and Peru and are enlisted as threatened species by the International Union for Conservation of Nature.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.